What's up and welcome to Sweathead. My name is Mike Pollard. It's 7:30 a.m. I am sitting across the road from where they shoot the Daily Show. I'm out in the park. I guess it's the middle of the back end of summer in New York. Days are quite long. There's a lot of noise. But it's also a kind of weird time. So a lot of people who live here, they leave for weeks, or at least for weekends. And so tourist areas can be pretty busy, and some of the areas in which people live can be a little bit quiet. Although this morning I saw that there are some kids going back to school, which is weird. Must be private school. It's like a month earlier than the public schools. A bit less than a month earlier. What I thought I'd do over the next few weeks is just do some monologues, some essays. I realized I published one last week, and I think it's the only one that I've done this year, or the only one that I've kept up, because I recorded a few. The sound wasn't good for various reasons, new equipment, blah, 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 blah. So I deleted them. But what I thought I would do is, over the next few weeks, pause on the interviews and go through some of the things I've posted online, the things that have been most interacted with, and turn them into essays. You will hear a repeat of themes, and I think even what I'm going to talk about today, I've actually done a podcast on using the same title, but I thought, you know what? People probably overall come in and out of a podcast like this for a few months. I know if you've been listening to this for a very long time, thank you. But that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do some monologues, going to do some essays. I'm in Brazil this week, actually, flying out on the Wednesday night, there for 6-7 days, doing 6 talks. It's going to be intense. Going to an event called Hacktown, which is like South by Southwest, 2 hours north of Sao Paulo. And I'm doing four sessions there. Doing a keynote. And when I do these talks these days, I don't really like doing talks. So I'm going to work out how to make it interactive and strange, get people to do stuff. Got to meet up with the Grupo de Planejamento, which is the equivalent of the APG, the Account Planning Group in Brazil. I'm talking to executives at the House of Denmark. I think that's an embassy, or it's like the Danish government having a space there. That's going to be interesting, because for about 60 minutes on Saturday, I believe there's going to be a group of executives, and I'm going to talk to them about why they're the problem when it comes to creativity in their own companies. So it's quite a provocative talk. I don't know who's going to come or how many people will be there. I think 20 to 30 for that particular one, maybe on the Friday for the keynote 800. And then on Sunday, I'm going to do a session about breaking creative blocks. And my goal with most of these talks, the first four, is to not use slides at all or much. And sometimes I think that can let people down, because it's part of the expectation of a talk, professional talk. But I really quite like what's called constructivism, where you build your teaching sessions or your talking sessions around the audience and around what they want, how they respond, what they say. So anyway, that's Brazil. And then got a masterclass in Sao Paulo on Wednesday. The only other things before I get into the content is, we've got 2 masterclasses coming up. One with Maria van Buskirk from Media by Mother. It's on comms planning. That's in September. Also Tahar Breis in October. One of the most awarded strategists in the world. We'll be talking about creative briefs and the award-winning mindset. And we're going to do a big accelerator in October. It's 4 weeks with me, the Sweathead Strategy Accelerator. If you sign up before the end of August, you'll get access to the masterclasses, both of those, as well as the Do Together. Shout out to everyone who came to the Barbie event on Friday. We had about 300-400 people come through. It was good fun. If you're on the email newsletter, I'm going to send out links to the decks today. And we might do something with a video. I might turn it into a podcast. Or if you're a Sweathead member, we'll put it up on the Slack. All right, let's get into the content. Hope you're doing okay out there. It's weird. It's weird times, actually. I was talking about this with some people yesterday, but also in my DMs. It's probably a story that's not being told much, because from what I can tell, a lot of people that I'm around in the strategy world, I think there's a lot of unemployment and a lot of layoffs happening. I get a lot of DMs, people just laid off, expecting to get laid off, long-term laid off or long-term unemployed, trying to get back in, finding the hiring market slow. But then we just hear all these mixed messages about how, you know, the American economy or the US economy hasn't tanked in the way that maybe it could have. And then even the employment statistics, April, I think it was, no, March, it was down 2,000 in the US in advertising, and then April it was up 2,000. But I don't know what the spread of those roles is. You know, are those roles all going into, well, first of all, there are more junior, more young people coming in from what I understand. So some of those roles are going to the people who are new and less expensive. But then what's happening with the spread of strategy roles? I'm not sure. But if you're a journalist or you've got access to that data and you can share it with me, please do. Please do. Because I think there's a bigger issue out there than we know, than we talk about. So today I'm going to talk about briefs and briefings. I've got two posts, and I know I've spoken about probably both of these topics quite a lot, but as far as doing a monologue, not this year. So that's what you get. All right, so the first post that we're going to go through starts with, before you brief a creative team, check your brief for these four things. That's what I'm going to get into. I think creative briefs and briefings are kind of scary-ish when you're starting out. And honestly, if you're like 21, 22, 23, and you're briefing senior creative teams, you're either amazing or that's probably a bit reckless. And I know it frustrates people who want to get an entry-level strategy role to hear stuff like this, but most people somehow are in the industry in different roles and then a few years in switch to a strategy role. And what's interesting is this particular post that I'm going to go through now reached quite a lot of people, had quite a lot of engagement. You got to ask yourself why. It's about briefing. So before you brief a creative team, check your brief for these four things. So I think this thing reaches a lot of people because I try to post probably 4 to 5 times a week. I never really know what's going to do well, and sometimes I don't do 101 stuff because I'm like, oh, everybody knows this, and then I'll just quickly do something and be like, oh, fine. And the 101 thing will do really well, which is, you know, potentially reach a lot of people, get a lot of comments. I'm not super analytical with it all. I keep a light eye on it because I just want to make sure I'm using my time well and, like, you know, in a weird way, serving my audience. I don't use that phrase. That was a weird phrase to come out of my mouth, but you know, I write to be read, so I want to make sure that the things that I'm writing are useful and reaching people. But sometimes I overthink the 101 stuff or dismiss it, and then I'll do it and be like, ah, okay, interesting. But creative briefs and creative briefings are intense, and when you're new-ish, you know, you could be a few years in and you're suddenly dealing with someone who's many more years in, 5 years in, 10 years in, when you're 3 years in, and all of that. They're big differences when you're young and starting out. And you notice that maybe the creative team seems moody, or they're not really responsive to you, or you've heard that they don't really like strategy and all these kinds of things. Yet for you, the briefings is really heroic moments. And so if I'm looking at work at all, now I've written a lot, I've read a lot, and I've laid out magazines and books, which means that I tend to look at text really, really quickly. I scan it. And if I'm just seeing a waterfall of really long words, I don't really want to engage with it at all. If I'm seeing a lot of pages or slides where that's unnecessarily, I want to back off. I have less patience for that stuff these days. Always did, but especially now. And what's interesting, if you've attended any of the summer camp interactions, like, so for example, last week we had people share their 4Cs work in the summer camp, which was awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But as soon as someone sort of is defensive, or they start to give me additional context or additional information, or they resist something I'm saying or asking, it's usually a question, you know, which could be something like, okay, you conducted some research, what's the most interesting thing you found? Or tell me the three things you found in research that are the most interesting. I try to ask a focusing question like that and spend a little bit of time trying to understand where their thinking came from. And if someone's resisting that, or they're like, well, let me give you context, or I've got all this information, I just have less patience for that now because it's their ego resisting that kind of interaction. And my role, or my desire in that moment, is not to be right, is to ask questions to help them get somewhere that I personally, subjectively, think is more interesting. So I find there's a lot of dynamics around all of this stuff. Okay. So before you brief a creative team, first of all, hopefully you've spoken with them, shared your thinking with them, hopefully you've done some research, hopefully you understand the category and realize, or at least aim to not just be doing cliche stuff. And I don't know what it's like out there in most places right now, but working in an office in Australia, I would always walk my work around. Yes, the words came out correctly there. Walk my work around. Little scribbles. I get pieces of paper. I didn't really want to type it up because it just felt formal. By the time you've typed it up, I feel like most people are looking for approval. Not, I don't like the word feedback that much, but not different thoughts. And so I'd take paper around, pieces of paper with, pieces of paper. I take paper, pieces of paper around. With scribbles and things on it, just try to have a conversation, see what's stuck with people, and if they had better words, more interesting words, or we got somewhere more captivating for them, I would use it. My job was not necessarily to be the author; it was to be responsible for getting a good brief together that people wanted to work on. So you want to check your brief before your briefing for these four things: honesty and emotion. That's number one. Emotional insights lead to more effective work. I know people debate the word insight. Cool, do your thing. But I feel like one of the things that most people just skip over for a very long time is I believe that emotional insights often come from uncomfortable places. It's the sad, happy at the same time. The one that I use quite often. This is a quote. I think it's an insight, but it's a quote from talking to guys about losing hair, and a guy said to me, "I don't feel accomplished enough to be bald." That's funny, but it's sad as well. It's both of those things at the same time. And it's just like going, this is one of my bits right now, because I think I've said this a few times recently. When I am working with people and they're really resistant of truth in any strategy work, let alone insights, I feel kind of gaslit. Like, I feel like I'm being manipulated by propagandists. You know, so as soon as someone starts to police negativity as well, I'm like, it's just not useful. You're telling me more about you than you are about me. I feel that when I was younger, that stuff, it didn't, you know, massively affect me. But over time, it sort of builds up and I think some of it just made me, it reinforced my sense of outsiderness, small o outsiderness. Of like, why I see the world differently and I feel different about it and I write in this particular way, and then people want to police it sometimes. Alright, so honesty and emotion. What does that mean? Because it's kind of big. Well, you can read your brief. Am I saying the truth here? Am I saying or sharing difficult truths here? Have I stopped at an easy, obvious observation, or have I dug into maybe why a particular behavior or perception exists, and then kept digging and kept digging? And a lot of it's about just avoiding the obvious stuff. Have I heard it before? Does it sound familiar? Okay, we'll keep going. I think another dynamic with honesty and emotion that I'll try to land here, especially over the past decade, I feel like a lot of strategists are too caught up in intellectual stuff and nobility. Things like purpose, I'm open to it. I think purpose is okay for a company who wants to attract talent. I don't think you need to communicate it a lot. I don't think most people actually care that much from research I've done and read. Yeah, and I know this stuff, you know, like Gen X, sorry, I meant Gen, not literally Gen X, but like Gen insert name, you know, believes that companies should serve a greater purpose, and then all those people are buying Shein and discounted this and that. Come on, a lot of hypocrisy out there. But I get nervous when a lot of strategists, instead of being honest, they start to work out how to put their own agenda into their work, but not in a useful way. Because they get caught up in these big concepts with big words, and you know, let's say you're selling beer to rural people in Pennsylvania. We don't need to talk about everybody's political issues all the time or political points of view. He's working out how to sell the beer. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Number two, check your brief for what I would call pineapple words. Okay, these are words that are monogamous words. They don't cheat. The word pineapple, I say the word pineapple, you pretty much know what it is. It's monogamous. It doesn't cheat. It doesn't have a lot of other synonyms. And so if you are writing in a way that is the opposite of that, it's okay. You get the words out and then go to work. But realize that the goal is to get to shorter, sharper thinking. How do you do that? Well, you look at each sentence and you see which long words you can shorten. So one and two syllable words. Maybe that's your goal, to largely, like 95% of, to write largely short words, 95% short words, one or two syllables. You can get rid of describing words. You don't have to, but you could. Describing words describe verbs and nouns. Adverbs and adjectives is also what they're known as. You can get rid of them. Brilliantly clever. No. And you can swap in strong verbs and strong nouns. Anyway, I think I've talked about this very recently as well. I will keep talking about it. It's the biggest issue out there, just language in this field, where we talk about clarity and then we write in ways where we're not clear. The other thing when you're looking at your brief is like, or any framework actually, is there a theme or a thread coming through this? If you've got a framework with lots of boxes on it and there's no apparent theme leaping through it, for example, you're not repeating a word or a word or two that are very connected, then you're just jumping all over the place. You're not building up to telling a story, which is what a brief is. It's a mini story. So I often talk about the New York Knicks and my silly example of anger management. In the creative brief and in any strategy framework, I would expect the word anger or anger management or rage or, I don't know, maybe the opposite, calmness, peace. I'd expect those words to appear throughout, not just in the middle of a framework and not just at the end. And it takes some stubbornness to do that. But once you get all your information out and it's jumping all over the place, once you start to find a theme or two, which is potentially two separate strategies, you then want to write your documents in a way that stays very, very close, very true to those words, to those themes. And don't let anything in that doesn't connect to those themes, because it's a distraction. The fourth thing you want to look for in a creative brief is lateral leaps. So are two topics coming together in a way that creates new meaning, because that new meaning will create new value. And yes, that is to say that strategy work is creative work, at least in advertising. Creative work deals with ideas. Ideas bring topics together to create meaning and value. So you want to just check your writing to see if you've got a sentence in every paragraph that follows through on the theme, that has honesty and emotion, that's using clear, short, monogamous words. Monogamous is a long word, but it has clear short words, vivid words. And then you want to check that there are lateral thoughts in there. Not campaign ideas, not slogans. Leave that for the next phase, even if you're involved for the next phase. But they're the four things you want to check your creative brief for. Honesty and emotion, pineapple words, a theme or a thread, lateral leaps. It's very simple. It's very simple. When it comes to briefing, can I tell you, I don't really like briefings. I don't like them. I'm kind of down on workshops right now too. Performative workshops. What I've been doing for the past few years is when I'm doing consulting work, not just training, although a lot of the consulting work has a training element to it, I basically want to open up a Google document and map or document a lot of the interactions in it, but then write a useful document together. Miro's cool, it's pretty. I've done a lot of stuff on walls and with post-it notes. I don't have as much patience for it all. Breakout groups, I've run hundreds. Sometimes there's good stuff. Sometimes. But a lot of it's performative. And that's okay. But the challenge is when it's performative and people don't acknowledge that, and then someone's trying to rush a finish. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Do we have the idea yet? Where are we? I've had that kind of weird behavior. I've had that weird behavior. All right, second and final essay for this episode. If you're going to put a creative brief to work, give it a high-paying job. The job of a creative brief is not to educate the creative team about marketing. Friends, some of your creative briefs are very insecure. I get it. You've been learning some words. Maybe you even went to college or university. Cool. Don't need to see it in the creative brief. What does that mean? You start talking about things like distinctiveness, differentiation, salience. You want to use all of the path to purchase, awareness, consideration, intent, blah, blah, blah. And use all of that language in the creative brief. Just don't. Challenge yourself not to use any marketing jargon at all in the creative brief. That's one way to change your relationships pretty quickly, hopefully for the better, but maybe not always. The job of a creative brief is not to bully the creative team with everything you know. There are some creative teams who are very research oriented and they want a lot of information. Sometimes it's because that's how they are. Sometimes that's because they don't trust the strategist. And sometimes that's because they kind of either want to do the strategy themselves or just sense check what you're giving them. Now, if you're always interacting in these formal ways where you're not speaking or sharing things beforehand, then, I don't know, the role of the creative brief in that moment is not, it's, you know, like a surprise creative brief in a creative briefing, that doesn't feel good. I don't think it feels good. Not if you want to get the most out of the team. But also, they don't need to know that you've done days of research and there are 50 bullet points of things that you want to tell them. And sometimes when you're briefing, that can come out with, oh, and then we did this, and then we did this, and we've got so much information, and da-da-da. So I get it. You're excited. You got all this information. You're feeling a little bit insecure. But just slow it down. Try to learn how to deliver a creative brief, maybe even in 5 to 7 sentences. So that when you're briefing, and I know again, you might have to be very performative, and maybe you work with creative teams that love this stuff, okay? But at some point, you're going to have a straight up conversation, and you just need to land the key points. Here's what the client asked of us. Here's the research that we did. Well, this is the research that we did. You know, we spoke to 10 people, 20 people, survey, blah, blah, blah. Here's the problem we found. You could say a few other things, but you could also go from problem to here's what we think we need to do about it. You don't need to give them all the information. The job of a creative brief is not to show your boss how much money you've spent on your education. Keep this in mind. I don't know, maybe you think this is kind of mean, but I've just seen a bunch of documents over the years, I'm not saying anything about anything recent. And my brain just turns off if I'm 3 or 4 slides in and it's just, I've already seen like 20 boxes on the slides. With a whole bunch of bullet points, I'm like, I don't think this is going to improve. It doesn't improve. I'd rather see one image on a slide, or a word on a slide, or a sentence on a slide, and maybe after that, a few supporting points. But by the time we're a few slides in, and we've seen lots of boxes and lots of bullet points, to me, it's either insecure or the person doesn't know what they're doing, and it doesn't get better. Doesn't get better. It's like a Netflix show. If the first scene's not good, I don't know. Maybe it's going to grow on you, but maybe it won't. The job of a creative brief is not to put in plain sight the politics of everyone touching the project. You know, in some companies, there's like 10 to 15 names get put on a creative brief. And it's like, what? What's that? What are you doing? And you can often see, well, you might not see it in the final document, but when you, the fact that you can share things like creative briefs as a Google Doc or whatever it is and you get comments, doesn't mean that everybody has to comment on it or like just dump comments on it. There has to be some responsibility, some accountability there. And the thing is, you just see all this stuff, it's just like, you know, I think the audience description needs to be more empowering. Or, I don't know, is this really showing our North Star? This is this strategy cliche. That don't make any of the work better. They just confuse people, especially if you're powerful, senior and powerful. It's like, yeah, I guess we need more North Star. And we need to be more empowering in the audience description. It's like, I don't understand what you're saying. But often, this is just people jockeying for power, status, attention in the comments. Can get reflected in the brief. And sometimes the brief will feel a little bit scattergun, a little bit scattered, because people are trying to compromise. I feel like a creative brief, it needs one strong, authoritative voice. One strong voice. Didn't need to add that extra describing word in there. The job of a creative brief is not to list all the features the product team are infatuated with. And I know some of you are working in more engineering-based or engineering or product-minded companies, and this is really hard. Especially if you've got a CEO who gets involved with brand and advertising, but either wants to be the author of the story or just wants to tell people about all the features. The only features you really need to include in a creative brief are the ones that support the argument that you're making for the strategy. That's my point. To me, the job of a creative brief is devious clarity. Devious clarity. It's an attempt to mess with a creative team. I put this stuff up online and someone's always like, I just want clarity. Why does it have to be devious? And I'm like, relax, mate. Relax. Shits and giggles. It's because I'm Australian. You know, like, I realize that a lot of our culture, we have a lot of banter in the culture, a lot of one-upmanship, a lot of put-downs, the tall poppy syndrome. We're cheeky. We're cheeky. We like our advertising to be cheeky as well. Oh, yeah, but I just prefer a clear brief, not a cheeky brief. Okay, relax. Relax, friend. Relax. Like, what's useful and move on. Whenever I put this stuff up, I get reactions like that. It's just like, oh my God. Just calm down. Calm down. I rarely speak in absolute truths, because I don't know. Are there any? There must be some. There are some. Just trying to largely dislodge conventional thinking, which is where people see, well, you know what, this is not conventional. This is probably new thinking as these documents and these roles have moved into more places, that a lot of people see creative briefs as these formal documents. And they always were, but what I mean, let's call it capital F formal. No, that's not useful. They just become too serious. That's what I mean. They become too serious, too pseudo-academic. Everyone's trying to show that they've studied some books or whatever, went to school. Most creative teams I know and respect, they don't like any of that. But again, if I put that online, someone's like, oh my, how do you know about creative teams? You're not a creative. I'm like, relax. Jeepers. All right. So ask yourself this of your brief, of the briefs that you're writing right now. One, can I write this creative brief in a creative way? Again, I don't need a creative brief in a creative way. Sometimes when people write creative briefs in creative ways, they suck. Sometimes they try to write haikus. Okay. That doesn't even make sense. Because what the person's talking about when they react like that, which is what happened to this post, you're not talking about someone writing creatively. You're talking about someone writing in an unclear and maybe creative way. So clear and creative. Like good non-fiction writing. You know that genre? It's not a genre. Two, what's the least I need to write to make it work? I know I write a lot and I've written some long things, but if I'm writing a strategy document, I will give myself a moment to think, what can I remove from this? Could it be a sentence? Could it be a word? Talking about here. I wouldn't do a one word creative brief. You could, but on a slide, for example, let's say we're looking at creative brief slides, frameworks. You know, could it be three words? Could it be five words? What's the least that I need here? Three, is it obvious or unexpected and a bit devious? If you've seen it before, it means that other people have definitely seen it before. So try to push somewhere new. That would be the conventional thing to do. Four, am I telling the creative team anything they don't already know? The easiest way just to stay irrelevant to creative teams is to tell them things that they know, or to be boring, or to be too serious, or to be really confusing all the time. all of those things are exhausting, and they show the creative team that you don't really know what you're doing. All right, I'll keep it short today. I'll try to record one of these things in Brazil, and I've got a whole bunch of other travel coming up. So we've got Brazil, we've got Batumi, Georgia, Istanbul, Turkey. As of the past couple of days, I think I'm going to try to do a masterclass in September in Istanbul, Turkey. If you know anyone who wants to come or wants to help put it on, let me know. What else? Peru in October, late October. Coming to Peru for at least one masterclass. You can always DM me for details. I'll see you next time, friends. Peace.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy, memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.